Yeah.
Okay, it is January 16th, Planning Commission work session on the comprehensive plan, and this meeting is being recorded.
Okay, thank you, Planning Commission members. You all received or should have a copy in front of you of your packet. This is going to be your notebook throughout the 2016 plan update. This is structured in such a way that as we move forward in the coming months until the plan is adopted, you will be receiving issue papers, notes, policy chapters. There are about 10 chapters or 10 elements that you're going to be receiving and reviewing. So keep your binder. That's what I would suggest. It doesn't help us to every work session bring you a new binder, so this will work. When you receive materials from us, you just insert it away because it's already been tagged. So it makes it much easier for you to use. Okay? And before I start, let me again say congratulations to Chair Ron Barker and John. The press release went out. We saw that at least it gives us some comfort that there is some continuity. Even though I'm coming to you, I'm going to be making presentation because I believe some of you are new, haven't gone through the process in terms of plan update, with the exception of maybe Tom Barker, and I don't think you have.
No, but Steve has.
Steve, yes. So I would say this is really a new planning commission, if you will, that we will walk through, with the exception of the other two members, as we go through this process. So today what I will do, I have about 45 minutes. I may not use all of that, so that I will reserve some time for you to ask questions. I have other staff that work for the county in community planning, Gary Albright, Colette Anderson, Jeff Knighton. They will have opportunity to discuss item 3, 4, and 5 on your agenda. What I will do is, in your packet you have the first issue paper that was presented to the board. The first issue paper is more or less a background information. I'm not going to go into details on that. Some of that will be covered in my PowerPoint presentation. The second issue paper is focused on population projections, and again, I'm going to cover that briefly in my presentation. Issue paper 2 focused on the Office of Financial Management, that is the State Office of Financial Management. They are the agency that we are required by the statute to use their population projections for planning purposes, for growth management planning purposes. The OFM population projection are also used for revenue disbursement and other activities of the state, but we are required under the state statute to use the Office of Financial Management population projections for growth management. So they have provided us a 2035 all the way to 2040. They provide a population projection in low, medium, and high sales. It's up to the local jurisdiction, in this case Clark County officials, to pick a population number for growth management planning purposes. So this issue paper really lays out the projections and our recommendation to, or what would be our recommendation to the county commissioners to pick a population number for the 2016 plan update. this issue paper pretty much covers some of the rationale or factors that the board have to consider, and also the rationale for why we are making the recommendation to, or will be making a recommendation to the board to pick the OFM medium population number. The medium is the most likely number of growth that we will see going forward, and I will show some of the reasoning for that as I make my presentation using the PowerPoint. And you will see why. First, I must say that no one predicted that the housing is going to be in slump and we're going to be in a deep recession, but because of that, or due to that, the carrying population have slowed significantly, and for a variety of reasons, we are recommending that we pick the slower growth population. We have, when I say we, the county have the opportunity to revisit, you know, update of the plan. Now we are no longer on a 10-year cycle, it's much shorter. We are now on the 8-year cycle when we update the plan. So with that, that's what you have really addressed on issue paper. But the other packet in your handout, if you will, is the commons checklist, which Gary Albright will discuss. The commons checklist, quickly, Gary is going to go into details on that, but it is a checklist recommended by Commons that we prefer. I'm not going to steal the thunder from him, so he's going to go into details as what is in here. But quickly, it summarizes new amendments that have been made since the statute was enacted, and we are required to make sure that when we do our next plan, that we comply with all changes that have been made in the statute. The next item in your packet is a schedule. Again, Jeff will go through that schedule. So you see what is coming. You're going to be very busy in the coming months, but it will make sense for us to engage you earlier in the process and not bog down as we come close to the adoption process. So that's why we want to come to you early, and the state statute require us to also be engaged in early and continuous public participation and input. So the earlier we come to you, the more we give opportunity for those that have been following this process to be able to provide us input, and also to you, so that you know and digest what the issues are, so that towards the end, you will be able to adopt one document that you would have dealt with the policies and made suggestions towards the next of changes. With that, I'll turn to my PowerPoint presentation, and hoping that I can stand up and do that. This is more very similar. Some of you that attended the board work session when I made this presentation, if it's old, forgive me, but I really wanted to bring you up to speed in terms of the background that I think is necessary as we move forward. So I want to start
yes, ma'am.
Start about with the history of planning in Clark County. Why do we plan? And then the commissioner's role in planning, which you advise them on policy matters and land use. You know, it comes to you first before it goes to the board for their final action. Then I'll talk briefly about the next steps.
Well, some of you are aware that what started the Growth Management Act was as a result of, you know, what you may call runaway growth that was occurring in the early 70s and 80s, and the concern of unplanned and coordinated growth. So it became a grassroots effort to have the legislature do something about not only transportation, but how we preserve the rural area or agriculture, that the growth that was occurring was significant. I think some of you who were here then were familiar with the uproar, particularly in the Puget Sound area, about transportation-related issues and the growth that was occurring in the late 80s. And as a result of that rapid growth and unplanned nature of it, there was a grassroots effort to do something. And the first, I won't go into detail, but the first initiative really didn't go anywhere. The legislature didn't react on that. But again, there was a second push, and that finally passed. The county, or Clark County, was one of the fully mandated counties planning under the Growth Management Act, which was passed in 1990. And if you look at this map, the dark gray areas were full, handful of counties that were supposed to fully plan under the Growth Management Act. The other lighter counties that are only required to or opt out to fully plan, and the blanked out areas only focus on critical areas and resource land only. They're supposed to plan for critical areas and protection of resource. They're not supposed to plan or have all the full elements as prescribed by the statute. When we talk about the history of planning, some of you are aware we started in 1979. That was the first comprehensive plan developed by county planners at the time, and the board at the time approved that. The county did not have its first zoning, comprehensive zoning, until 1980. Some of you who have been following what was happening across the river know that Oregon started maybe 10 years, 15 years ahead of Washington. But prior to that, county had a comprehensive land use plan, which was adopted in 1979, and then the county adopted its first zoning in 1980 to implement the 1979 plan. When the Growth Management Act was passed in 1990, the county and all the cities, it took a 3 or 4 year process to put the first comprehensive growth management plan together. That was the first growth plan, which was adopted in 1994. We lived with that plan until sometime in 1999. We started what was called the 5-year review. The 5-year review morphed into the 10-year review because we couldn't finish in a timely fashion. So we started and completed that process in 2004. And the growth rate that the commissioners adopted at the time was a growth rate of 1.69. That was challenged, not only by Battleground, but I believe the building industry challenged that as well. So the reason for the challenge was that, in a nutshell, that 1.69 growth rate is way below the experience of Clark County. So the election of a new county commissioner, if you will, or changing the county commissioners, resulted in them saying, well, we want to address that appeal. And through that process, I think they came to some consensus that a settled settlement, if you will, that resulted in revisiting the growth rate in which the 04 plan was based. The direction of the board at the time was to look at a growth rate of 2.2% in the first 6 years of the plan, and then 2% in the remainder of the 14 years. So that resulted in the current plan that we have, which is was adopted in 2007. But it was more of a continuation of the 2004 plan. So it's hard to comprehend, but if you look at it from 2004 to 2024, it is 20 years. So that's why people say, well, you adopted it in 2007. Shouldn't it be 2007 to 2027? But it's actually, the base year was a continuation of the 2004, making some minor changes that addressed the appeal and subsequently extending it, continuing with the 2024 planning horizon. So that is the current plan and the growth population and the total growth rate that was used, and then the total estimated carry population that we will have by 2024. Some have argued, Steve will probably chime in, do we really have a 20-year, or do we have a rolling 20? What is it? Next slide. So in this slide, what I really focus on is, why do we plan? Why do we engage in this every 10 years, 5 years? Well, in a nutshell, we have RCW 3670A, which is actually the codified growth management legislation. There are some, I talked about the grassroots effort, but there were legislative findings that led to the adoption of the Act in 1990. Talked about infrastructure issues, talked about congestion, talked about preservation of rural areas or separation between rural and urban. All those were embodied in the legislative findings that led to the legislature adopting the Growth Management Act. In the Act itself, there are mandatory elements that we have to have in the development and adoption of our plan. Some of that, some of you who have a copy of our comp plan, see plan housing element, economic development element, and for example, not only economic development, transportation element, capital facilities element. There are some mandated elements that we have to have, and then there are some optional elements, that schools is a good example, community design is another example of optional element. We are required to have a public participation process so that, you know, the public needs to know what is it that we are doing every time we're going to update of our comprehensive plan. One is, you know, you're either informing them or engaging them. They have to be participating throughout the process, but you have to develop a plan so that they can follow what is it that we're doing, and then you provide opportunity for them to participate. The Act also requires that there be a coordination between the county and the local jurisdiction, in this case the cities. There may be other stakeholders, but we are required to coordinate our effort with the local jurisdiction. And the premise on that is that the county and the city's plan has to be consistent. And then there are reviews and schedules, just like the periodic review. And there is also have to be a provision. You go through annual review cycles, which requires us to have a provision that property owners have the opportunity to submit site-specific requests when we go through the annual review cycle, which you go through and review and approve. But in the same context, you want to make sure that those reviews or dockets or site-specific requests are consistent with the overall goal of the plan, if you were to look at it holistically. Then the act also requires that we have to use OFM, Office of Financial Management Population Projections, in developing our new and updating our plans. As I mentioned, the next update is due June 30th, 2016. This date is significant because, as some of you who have participated in the last processes, we go through and complete the process towards the end of the year. We don't have that luxury. So this is going to be due and off to the states June 30th, 2016. So very soon we're going to be on an accelerated schedule.
Can I just ask a question before you go on?
Okay.
I just want to ask about what is attributed to the growth of Washington State and Clark County from 1980 to 1990. Do you know? Was it Microsoft? Was it up in the Seattle area? Was it?
Did we
have more businesses come here that created a population growth? It's a huge growth.
It's a huge growth. I think you
can
look at
what we're doing now.
Yeah, you can look at it nationally. I think the economy was doing very well, you know, and those were the, I wouldn't say Reagan or Bush, you know, but the national economy was doing very well. And what was fueling it was just what was also happening at the national level. Plus, we were also considered as an escape valve to Portland.
Yeah.
And if you look at what occurred on the East County, I can't remember when 205 was built. That
1982.
Okay. That opened that whole area up, and you know, some will argue that our boundary was too big, and we have housing prices here was much smaller in comparison to Portland, which is, when you look at it from a regional market.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of things that was happening in the 1980s, but I wouldn't attribute that to, you know, what is happening. The same thing that is happening nationally is happening locally. Clark County at one point in the 80s, I believe, was one of the fastest growing county, not only in the state, but I think nationally, beside Clark County in Nevada. It was just what it was also happening at the national level. There are things we must consider. As I mentioned, we must have in our plan, make sure that the new plan meets all the GMA requirements. We also have to prepare what we call the Department of Commerce checklist. I touched on that briefly. We must also say, well, what are the planning assumptions that we're using in the development of our new plan? Last time we had the board provide us what they're calling their board principles and values. That's written down, and we can share that with the Planning Commission if you want. Next slide. These were the planning assumptions that was used in 1994, 2004, and 2007. The reason I think this is significant, I just put in here, what have we used? And did we have it, did we get it right? If you look on the left column, those are the assumptions. We presented here the Office of Financial Management range. In 1994, their range from low, the way to look at it is from low to high. So the low was, we will be at 356 to 416 in 1994. In 2004, they did another projection or estimate and said we could be between 453 to 571. And in 2007, when we did our plan, they had another projections, which was prepared in 2005, and said the Clark County growth will probably be in the low to the high range of 476 to 625, depending on the 20 year that you're planning.
And those numbers are the projected the high is the projected high population in 2025?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And the second column shows the actual number that the board chose for us to use in the planning horizon that we are planning for. For example, in 1994, we were estimating by now, today, 20 years, we are now in 2014, that we will be at a population of 416.
Yeah.
Well, it's 435. That's an estimate. 435,500. And in 2004, we were planning for a population of 517. That was the original. That was the 1.6 I showed you, which was later moved on to the last column. If you assume 2.2 in the first 6 years and 2% in the remainder, we will be at 584,310 by 2024. That was the assumptions. And then quickly, if you subtract, depending on the base that you're using, if you subtract that number from where you're going to be in 20 years, that's really the new growth, is the third column. That's what that represents. And then the other assumptions, which is very key, is the of that new growth, how much of that growth will be in the urban area and how much will be in the rural area. We call it urban and rural split. This is a policy call by the commissioners. This is key because it helps us in the sizing of the urban growth boundary. This is not cast in stone. The board can change it if they chose to. But our factual data appears to say the areas that we were really close to 80-20, the board changed that in 2004 to 90-10 and continued that in the work we did in 2007. So 90% of that new growth went to the urban growth area. We used that in sizing of the urban growth boundary. 10% of the growth went to the rural area. Now, I won't get into capacity issues, but we know that there is some capacity to accommodate more than 10% in the rural area. And by that I mean, if you look at the parcels that are out there, 10 acres or five, rural 5 that could, or 10 acres that are in rural 5 that could you do additional lot. If you do that in the rural 10, rural 20 and ag, there is capacity in the rural area. But this is something that we are monitoring as we do our plan monitoring report to see how close are we and are there still capacity in the rural area. And the final assumption here are just the population growth assumptions that went into the development of the plan. Next slide. Can you go forward? Okay. Now, this is very interesting because, as I indicated before, we are supposed to rely on the Office of Financial Management forecast. This, as you were saying earlier, why were we growing so fast? This line here is the actual Clark County growth compared to, this is the high, this is the medium, and this is the low. But this was their projection in 1995. You can see that we were really growing much, much faster than even their high. We didn't start matching them until later on. Go to the next slides. And from somewhere right in 2008, we started matching their medium, and since then we are now below their medium. That's the way to look at this. Okay. Next slide. So this is just the latest OFM projection that came out. This was completed, I believe, May 2012. So this is their latest. And since, I would say, 2008 and 2010 census, OFM have been really, we've been matching their medium consistently. They have improved in their forecasting and estimate. So we really, they've done a good job in their forecasting and so forth. Next slide. This is more of the boundaries that were adopted in 1994 when you look at the UGA compared to the rural area. Next one. This was the boundary in the 2004 plan. This is the 2007 plan. And the next one is everything together. So you can see the 1994 is in yellow. The 2004 areas added is in light green. And what appear to be pink or red is the 2007. So you can see how I wouldn't say expanded the boundary, but the outcome of the your recommendation to the planning, to the Board of County Commissioners, okay? And our coordination with the cities in the outcome that you see. I put here the when I presented this to the board, the role of the board. Well, the role of the board is basically for them to pick a number, and when they pick a number, there is no requirement in the GMA that we use OFM. OFM doesn't provide us employment numbers, so the county can pick any number that they chose for employment. And we are all, the board is also, they reviewed the vacant buildable lands model, which was developed going back to the 1990s. We have been using that since then. And that model, I would say, Steve will agree, we always constantly, I would say log ahead, but you know, we debate who is right and who is wrong with the cities. But we have done a good job since 1990 and have factual data to indicate that the VBLM, which is what we call it, is very reliable. It's the best we have in the state, and I'm very proud of being part of that in terms of developing it. The majority of my staff knows how to use it, how to analyze that. So if I'm not here, they can run with, you know, this program. So I'm very proud of that and what they have learned doing that. And I don't take the credit. Our GIS staff is also very good and one of the best in the state.
Is the vacant buildable lands database that's shared with the cities?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So everybody's using the same data?
Everybody's using the same data. When we run the VBLM, that is how much land, residential, commercial, and industrial is available. Everyone is relying on that. EDC, the building industry, they're relying on that. The cities are reviewing it and telling us where we are wrong or what. And then over time, you try that to see how are we coming close to the assumptions and how are we doing. So that's the VBLM. I will have, if you request, Bob Poole did a very good job presenting that to the commissioners when we had a work session with the commissioners. I can ask him to come and discuss that with you so that when we have conversation on the vacant buildable land, you are familiar with how it is used. At your request, I will do that. We have a slide, but I won't go into detail. Bob is much, much skilled than I am, too, even though I've worked with him on that. So the next thing that the role of the board, too, is that they have to, and staff have to work with our legal counsel to make sure that we are up to date on the current amendments to the statute. The second thing is that, you know, there are recent board decisions. You know, I can tell you, each time we've done a plan, it's always been appealed. So the board has to pay attention not only to recent court decisions, but what other decisions that have come out of the other group board that have made decisions that could be critical to how we go forward. And then we have to comply with court orders. When challenged and we lose, we have to comply. That's the role of the board. And sometimes we've come to you at the direction of the board that, you know, the work we did in removing the center junction, shrinking the UGA, that came out of the court order. And you reviewed that and advanced the recommendation to the board. The same is true for the Lagla property that came out of the court order to remove that from the UGA. And we came to you, presented the case. Well, we lost, and you complied and made a recommendation. So we have to pay attention to that. We also have our current 2007. We're not out of the woods yet. We're supposed to have a compliance hearing, I believe, Wednesday.
Yesterday.
But it now be moved to February. So there are some lingering issues we have to deal with, even though we're gearing up for the next update. So I will stop there. Is there any other slides? Oh, sorry.
Oliver, just to throw into the question about vacant lands on Clark County's community planning's website on the comprehensive growth management plan. We now have a link to BBLM information, and if it works correctly, it's pretty cool because the way they showed it to the board, it went back and basically you just swipe from 1994 up to almost the present day. You can see how places have grown and filled in any particular city. And that information is on, you can get to it from the Comprehensive Growth Management Plan website. I believe it's there, so if you want more information, and we just, the board said, get that out, put that on, you know, get that posted. So we added that a couple of months ago.
Okay, quickly, what this chart shows is the population and employment forecast. I am more hesitant to focus on the employment forecast because we haven't had extensive discussion with the commissioners, but we showed what that represents going forward. Again, if you rely on the OFM population projections. So you can see the current OFM. What you see on the first, I wish I had. These are census numbers, 2010 census number. These are 2024 numbers shown in that column. So for 2010, the county population, 425,363. Employment, 131. And our jobs to household, we have done jobs to population ratio before, but if you do your population to household, that means that for every it's a ratio of 1 to 0.8. for the 2024, we assume that we will be, by 2024, the county will have a population using those growth rates of 584,310 and a total employment of 230,000 even, and on a population to household ratio of 1 to 1. That's very aggressive. We haven't had 1 to 1 for quite some time, and we will have that conversation at some point. And if you take, yes?
Sorry, now what was the 2024, when was that assumption made? That in 2004, that 1 to 1 was assumed?
No, it was assumed in 2007.
2007,
okay. Yes. Very aggressive, you know, and like I said, you know, we haven't really come, but that's a policy call on behalf of the board. 2035, you can see the low OFM projections there, and our estimated employment that was done from the Employment Security, Scott Bailey prepared those numbers for us, and we have constantly relied on the work of Scott Bailey. because we don't have any other way to look at anywhere else to get the employment numbers. The state doesn't provide that to us, but we use Scott Valley.
But he's using trend data, right?
It is, yeah, that's
true. So unless we do something in a policy basis to reverse the trend,
that's true.
That's just the status quo.
That's the status quo, sure. If you and the jobs to housing ratio, excuse me, jobs to household for the law is again very close to what it would have been in 2010.
Which is our last census.
The last census. The medium number, which is what we are recommending that the board chose, shows a population of 562,207 and employment of 100 and close to 169, if you will, and the jobs to household of 1 to 0.78, and you can see the numbers there for the high. Next slide.
Come back to that employment number. So it's the same population percentage as the population. So it's the same growth rate.
Right.
So it was just a
mirror each other. Yeah, they mirror each other. Thank you, Gary. And what this slide shows is, some of the rationale for, not all, but some of the rationale for this lower scenario growth rate. If you look at, it's a good thing we prepared the aging readiness plan. Some of us are getting old. I am included. We are turning 65 almost in a high percentage. If you look at this graph, it shows the demographic change and trends that are occurring going forward. The red shows you the population under 65, and the blue is the populations at 65 plus. In 2010, about 11.5% of county population is 65 plus. It's estimated that by 2035, about 21% of the county population will be 65 or over. And if you look on the other column, that's the school age, 5 to 19 years of age and 0 to 4 plus 20. You can also see that the number, not necessarily the number of that, but you will see that the age category from 5 to 19 is going to be about 19% or 20% by 2035. What this is saying here, in terms of the demographic change, is that as our population, this gets into, birth rate and what class and so forth, but I'm not going to get into that in depth, but what we are seeing is that as we are getting older and the bearing age is not necessarily shrinking, but at what time that family formation is occurring and those that are going to be making that decision is going to be taking longer. We know that students that are coming out of college are coming out with huge debt. And an expert is telling us that it's going to take time for them to consider family formation and even getting into single family homes. So, and I can take my own kid for example. My daughter comes out of college with 100 or 200,000 debt, and her boyfriend is saying, I'm not sure they're going to rush into buying a single family home, and they're going to delay when they have to.
Yeah, we're
Some are moving back, even as we speak, some kids that went to college are moving back to their parents' home.
So this also says we got 40% of the population is basically out of the workforce.
They're all going to be retired soon, that's true, depending on how you look at it, but this is going to be a phenomenon that we're going to watch in the coming years. And people, you know, this is data, you can interpret it any way you want to.
More than 40 because they don't have 0 to 4 of
them. I don't think it's quite saying that. That's how I read it first.
0 to 4 plus 20.
Yeah, plus 20. You do that.
But 0 to 4 is not in the blue column, that's in the red column.
It's in the red column.
Right. So you actually want to look at word for it. Yeah. Subtract out 0 to 4.
You have to subtract that. Yes.
Yeah.
We can get much more than that.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, this is information that was also included in the slide that went to the board. This gives you an idea of where we are relative to residential, commercial, and industrial land. We are saying that we...
Well, before you go, can I ask a quick question about the left side of the chart, the people over 65? Is that a countywide or is that a national because of the...
No, that's rate, this one is going to be county. This is county.
Right, but I mean, is the national trend about the same?
It's about the same. Yeah, it's about the same. We're a little bit higher because, you know, people are retiring here, taking advantage of
that.
But we're a little higher than the national. Okay. So this is, you know, an estimate of where we are relative to what is available, residential, commercial, and industrial. I won't go into details. We'll have a conversation on this at a later time. We're going to be discussing this with the city so that we can all agree what the capacity is. Okay. This is very interesting, and I think this shows you really the level of building activity, if you will. So this number is actually what have been built from 1990 to 2012. The blue single family, light green is multi-family, and the dotted line is the average from 1990 to 2012, and the light blue, which you can see, is 1990, the median number from 90 to 2012. You can see pre-GMA, you ask the question, what are we doing? This first bar there is pre-GMA rush, and the second one is 164 pipeline rush, and the last one is the housing bubble. Then you can see what have been happening from 2000. You start seeing it from 2007, or even 2006, and see the number of building permits that have been issued, how that has been slowing down really bad in 2009, middle 2011, pretty much. But you can see that we are beginning to pick up.
How soon will the 2013 numbers, they're soon probably available. Do we have an idea? It might have some working in the system.
It's gonna bump up, but by how much I don't know yet. We are just in 2014, so last month we are compiling the data and it will become available soon. But it is picking up. But that also is because I think what is happening is that the inventory is what is being exhausted. The bank are loading up some of the things that they acquired as a result of the downtown also. The next slide. This really illustrates the next steps. We had a work session with the board. We prepared some scoping and we went through with them the buildable lands, and we're going to be doing something. We are required to complete buildable land analysis or buildable lands evaluation 1 year before we do the plan. There is our lead staff on that. I work preparing that needs to go to the state. We will present that to the commissioners before we send it to the state. We are required by the statute to complete that 1 year before our completion of our plan. I talked about the commerce checklist. we have a public participation plan that is ready to go to the commissioners on the 21st. We're having a public hearing. It has to be formally approved by the commissioners. And on the 27th of this month, we are asking them, that's next Tuesday, to formally call the public hearing and adopt and plan a population projection that we're going to use for the plan update. So those are the two things we are asking them to do. And we'll begin, we already, I meet with the our city counterpart on a quarterly basis. So I'm meeting with city planners tomorrow actually in Richfield, and I will continue to do that throughout the process. We're required to coordinate with them. And we are beginning, which is something that Cody and the entire staff are doing, but Cody is leading that. We're beginning work to reorganize our current comp plan, and that's what I meant, that you're going to be receiving individual chapters, maybe one or two chapters with policies, so that you can provide us your input. And we're going to be making this available to the public, so that at the same time you're reviewing it, they're reviewing it, and providing you any comment that you have. Depending on what number the commissioners pick, it might lead us into doing an environmental impact statement or not. Then we get with that, we get into the adoption process. So in a nutshell, that's really what I want to bring up to your attention and get you early involved. Some of you that haven't done this before, it's not rocket science, so you will learn with us, we learn every day. So that's it. Thank you. So I'll take questions before I turn it over to other staff to go over what you wanted to share with you. This is all informational. Steve, I've done this before. Who knows what the details? Ron, I've done it a couple of times, and you know, it could be 3 years. Sometimes, you know, this have taken 3 years, 4 years to complete one. I don't anticipate that it would take 3 to 4 years. I'm saying that I'm confident that I don't think it would take 4 years, unless the board decided to take
So one of the things I would like us to look at is the idea of we are in essence doing a rolling average, because we go back at this every 10 years. So how much capacity do we have left, you know, right now doing nothing different, compared to the idea of having to open up all the UGAs? Where do we sit in the population projection? I think those are some of the things I'd like to at least see on our timeline and our basis for making decisions to go out of that.
Good question. I think if you go back to the chart on the VBLM, you can see below the demographic change, that one. This is based on the rollover that occurred in 2012. We run the VBLM in January or so. So this is the January 2013 inventory numbers. And this is by the entire UGA. This is by UGA. So if you look at residential, we have provided that run to, we've made it public, as those that review this to look at it, tell us what is wrong. They've done so, and the cities have reviewed it. So what this shows is that there's about 8,000 acres of net vacant residential land in the UGA,
which would yield 147,000 new
folks,
people.
Right, and that is based, if you add that number to whatever our current population is,
which you said was 435,
it gives you the total.
Right.
Yeah.
So doesn't that take us pretty close to the median number for 2035?
Takes us above that. Okay. If you take commercial, we are saying that there's about 3,000 acres of commercial available that will yield you 62,000 roughly. On the industrial side, we said it's about 35, 36, take your number, that's about 32,000 jobs. You add two, the two together, you're about 94,000.
So those numbers are in the UGA?
Those are numbers are in the UGA.
Right.
So it's not land outside the UGA?
It's not land outside the UGA, these are within the UGA. So land like the rural centers, or home businesses that are not in here. There may be other, this is where we get into conversation with the cities. There may be, because this is based on the vacant lands work, there may be other areas like redevelopment that we're not capturing here. For example, the redevelopment of the waterfront, you know, the city will come to us and say, you know, we are going to redevelop the waterfront, even though there are some issues related to that. Don't know whether the developers are going to back out or not because of the oil terminal. You guys made that on your own. But the city of Vancouver will say, no, we are going to be redeveloping downtown, and it's not in your model.
Yeah.
The waterfront, that's going to yield a number of jobs. It's also for us when I talk about coordination. Coordinate with the cities and come to some consensus, show me, you know, what the developers are saying, this redevelopment is going to yield both in jobs and housing units. Some will say, well, I'm not sure whether that's going to be the case or not, but we went through that in 07, what we were calling overrides, so that we were picking up due to what the cities have provided to us, actual studies, things that the pipeline that the BBLM is not capturing, and then agreeing on how to agree on what the true capacity is, all that factor there. But this is just based on the BBLM itself, what it's called.
Right. And I bring this up, I guess, just to the idea that says we have an opportunity, we can focus much more on job creation componentry, and say if that 0.78 jobs per person ratio was something that, you know, we would like to see change, so we're not sending so many people across the bridge to find work. You know, we have an opportunity to try and focus on that and see what would that look like then.
I don't disagree. That's why I think we have to have a conversation, separate conversation, focus on the job to household ratio, and what policy direction, and what the community wants to do, not just only about talking about. Well, what is the community wants to do when it comes to job and economic development? That also, as you know, is going to be coupled with the necessary infrastructure to support that. You know, just having that as a policy doesn't get you anything if you don't have, you know, the you guys vessel lifting up and going in some areas. You know, so infrastructure is going to be key as to what we do. Know, going forward, we have, and I've been talking to the board, we have some areas where we have urban holdings since 1994, and some of those issues are issues on, you know, essential services to support the urban holdings. So all that is going to be a conversation we need to have. I think I can say that when I presented this to the board, the cities were in support of our recommendation that take those scenario. We haven't had a conversation yet on jobs. So the cities are still at this point, you know, in support of looking at a much more growth, you know, scenario. We may land on focusing on jobs. I'm not sure yet what is going to come. I have that conversation with them. And with your own input, I think that would set the community in the direction that we want to go. That's our opinion.
So it looks like the growth rate, based on the chart you had up there for the last 3 years, has been somewhere around 0.7% per year, which is way below.
Less than 1%.
Yeah.
The last 7 years we've been low. We haven't reached 1%.
Yeah, 10,000 over the last 3 years.
Yes, pretty much.
And then the net vacant acres. When he talked about the model, he pulled acres out based on environmental constraints. He pulled acres out that he deemed not going to be developed for whatever reason, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Is this the number after those
reports?
Yes. That's gross, right? Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Yes.
Because that seems like big numbers.
That's
and there was this issue about 50% critical areas redeveloping. Is that in that number, or is that pulled out?
It is pulled out on the net.
50%.
Yeah, back at some point there was an assumption
that we did that before. Right, we had that discussion about
redevelopment. Yeah, that's not in there anymore.
But so those 3,500 acres there don't include 50% critical then anymore.
It doesn't include that. And I will have Bob come and chat with you and present the same information so that you're familiar with what is in the model and the assumptions that go into how we come to this net.
Does that 3,500 include the port's parcel 3?
I think we treat the port differently because they're exempt.
Because they've got they got a 500 acre parcel of industrial land that, you know, will develop someday, but it probably won't be in the next 10 years.
We treat them differently. And I'm not sure how we put them in the model, but we used to exempt them from inclusion here because we treat them differently. And there was some concern from, you know, the port and the brokers because the port doesn't sell, they operate differently.
Right, so they don't sell. That land is until the port decides to do something with it, nobody can get a hold of it.
Well, there's just some, baseline stuff that we have to go in and understand the assumptions and accept them. I recall us having the discussion about schools, take this land out, even though they're all somewhat job-creating parcels of land. We didn't include them as job-creating.
You're right. We have an assumption for job category that we are calling public sector. I mean, they are going to be some, and some of them will occur on existing buildings. For example, this building, we have capacity to add jobs without building any other facility. So until the economy improves, I'm just using that as an example.
Right.
So we do have a category for public sector jobs. I'm not saying the county is hiring.
And just so you know, this is online already.
Yeah.
So if you want this presentation tomorrow, you can just download it as a PDF.
One of the interesting things about this, which if you haven't picked up on from this, you will pick up on, is we're currently planning in 2024 for 584,000 people. That's 310,000 people. That's all we're showing. The median number from OFM for 2035,
it's less.
So at 11 years, is 562,000. So the board's indicated that that's probably pretty close. So in a sense, we're planning for 22,000 fewer people 11 years hence, and so that may make for some interesting conversation. What are we going to do? It's not likely we'll shrink them that way. So, as Ron said, looking at some strategic job reducing plans.
Are we going to be able to look at parcel size? Because I know the CRDC had an industrial land study that studied parcel count every end of it up, and they studied parcel size and found that there might have been a lot of individual small 5-acre pieces to add up to 3,500. There weren't very many that were 20 acres and larger.
Yeah, did they have 13 pieces?
Something like that.
Small number.
We look at that every time. Yeah, we can look at it.
We can look at it.
I know last time we had, railroad industrial was going to be a nice place where we could say, look, that's where we're going to have a lot of big parcel. And, then of course the growth board.
So that's got to be the difference, is we actually find something that, we're not going to lose right after we stick it in. So.
And I assume that everything the growth board took out is removed from.
It is removed from this estimate.
Yeah. And most of it was slated for jobs.
Yeah. I think it would be a mistake for us to just roll it right back in again this next time.
Just get the cities on board, Dan, right away.
Well, there is that.
That's right. It's valid for us all.
They will ring line to the Supreme Court again, though.
So well, we won on that issue.
So how's everybody doing? Do you need a break? I know you just took one. Yeah. But you want to just keep rolling?
Okay. I'll turn this over to Gary Albright to just go over the comments checklist.
He has 20 minutes to make up, Gary.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to hear me talk about that.
It says 45 minutes. I think I tried to, even though I don't speak, you know, really fast, but I tried to summarize it.
No, I'm okay. I don't need the screen, so thanks,
oh,
Oliver.
Before we get started, one more question. Are we looking at the impacts of the new stormwater regulations in our, when we're updating the technical analysis for the global lands model, and if that's going to eat up more infrastructure for stormwater?
Yeah, we are having a conversation on how to go about making adjustment to the model and in our environmental services, preparing the new LID and all that, low impact development. So we're looking at that, and you know, depends on the model that we adopt in terms of how we regulate runoff. That is going to play a significant role on how we adjust the model. We are constantly, like I said, adjusting the model to realities, new issues that we have to deal with, for assumptions and so forth. Yeah, we're going to do that going forward.
It's a good news, bad news thing. The bad news is we're going to have more infrastructure.
Yeah.
The good news is the Corps is going to be in the right of way. So, in terms of like stormwater facilities, rain channels, and so forth.
For like subdivisions?
Yeah.
So we'll see what's coming. We're going to see what come out.
It's a good point.
Yeah, I recognize that, and we're having a conversation. We're coordinating with Environmental Services draft on what they're coming up with and how that's going to play a role.
I talked to some engineers, and they said, it depends on what part of county you're in as to whether the new regulations require you to heat up more land or not.
Yes.
If you're in an area where you've got infiltration, maybe it just increases your cost, but doesn't actually require you to lose lots. But
yes,
in other areas, like maybe battleground where it's all clay, they may have to lose lots just to comply.
Right. Good point.
Ready to move on?
Yeah.
All right. So it's a great discussion of what we want to change in the comp plan, if we have to change anything. But then there's the requirements of what do we actually really need to change by the GMA. So the Department of Commerce created a checklist, and I just want to talk about that checklist, just how we created it. And I don't want to go over the whole checklist. You don't want to hear me talk about the whole checklist. So I'll just briefly say how it was created and what we looked at to create the checklist. It was very detailed and lots of fun looking at it and creating it. So staff worked together. So the Department of Commerce checklist, it's not a requirement, but they encourage jurisdictions to use it and help with their own comprehensive plan updates. So that's what we did. And it sounds funny to say, but with that checklist, we used another list to review this comp plan checklist. So Growth Management Services has another list of amendments to basically GMA RCWs from 1995 to 2013. So we looked at that list to see what GMA amendments have occurred that we need to look at and make sure they're addressed in our comp plan update. And so that's basically how it was created. And I just want to show you that we looked at it thoroughly, and so there was an example in 2011 for the legislation for ESHB 1478, which delayed or modified certain regulatory and statutory requirements affecting cities and counties. So that basically was the change from 7 to 8 years, for updating your comp plans. And so, and that amendment is seen in section 1D of the checklist. So if you flip through the checklist, you see it there. It's covered under 1D. And it was on a roll, so 1D seemed to fit well with the 2009 legislation amendment from EHB 1967 that prohibits expansions of urban growth areas into 100-year floodplains. So these are the sections of the comp plan that will need to be addressed based on amendments that have occurred. That's it. So the checklist is rather lengthy. It's got 67 sections in it, and 30 of them are colored in green to indicate the ones that we need to focus on and do the work on. So it's, in essence, a de facto work program, scope of work. We have our own separate scope of work, but this is part of that. So it's all interrelated. And that's it. That's my checklist discussion.
If there are things like the service mining overlay, the plan it is, because that's something we have to have current and update. So you'll see that in here as an example of something we have to do. So that's a project that's got a separate track.
Mineral resource plan.
There you go. You're very familiar with it. But that's one of the things we're trying to do. So you'll see that in here as something that we're working on.
Right. And this will not. If anything were to change, I mentioned earlier that staff is going to be going through a rewrite of our current comp plan, so this is not going to be final. If we do the reorganization of our comp plan and the text and pages where you can find that we comply changes, we have to, towards the end, amend this to show where the final pages or where folks who are using this checklist to check on our compliance with the Flood Management Act, then this will change and submit it towards the tail end. That's all I wanted to add. So these pages may change. We arrange our current documents. And, you know, the legislature is meeting in session. There are new bills introduced, so we're going to be monitoring that as well. I'm hoping that it will not drastically require us to do anything new, but you never know. Yeah. I have a copy of bills that they've introduced that I'm monitoring, but we'll see what happens. Some of them are high priority, some of them are just low priority.
Moving on, who is this one? Is that you?
Yeah,
okay.
It's Colette.
Yeah. It's Colette.
Colette.
I know it's been a while.
Okay.
So public involvement. We're not proposing too much different than what we normally do, but we were obligated to put a plan together so how we're going to progress through the 2.5 years. But what I want to draw your attention to is one of the graphics that's in the plan that kind of highlights the whole phasing. So last July, we had our initial overview work session with the board, which is what you just got today, and we started putting the pieces and parts together for tonight. So the public involvement plan, we did a BBLM overview, educational stuff. So the comp plan itself and the full-blown, you know, let's get her done, started in January of 2014. Okay, so we have until December of 2015 to accomplish all the things in the green box. Okay, some of it you'll be really, really involved in. Other times we'll just be bringing some summary stuff through you and let you know that we actually went through the process. We have a calendar that Jeff's going to talk about that at least covers the next 4 months, what you can expect to see. Okay, and we'll give it to you in chunks so you're not overwhelmed and it hopefully makes some sense to you. And then the last part is the adoption process, which is going to be 2016. Our hope is that we get it all the way through the adoption process and up to Commerce in May. 2016, a whole month before we're obligated to do so. We'll see how far we get. But by the end of December 2015, you should have your draft comp plan and all those other pieces and parts so we can go through the following plan. process, the big one. Other than that, you're going to get continual emails from us as when we're having work sessions, maybe an open house, scoping, whatever it is, all the way through, and then we'll be tracking it. And that's all I have on that. You don't have a lot of dates today, you just got basically phases.
Any social media in the public participation plan?
We do. We're going to give it a shot. There's some that we currently do today, but we're expanding that a little bit. And it's going to depend on how complex this process gets. If we're dealing with the OFM medium and we're actually faced with having too much population and, you know, what's our scope of work, we'll tailor the social media to the task at hand. Right now, we're not really sure yet until the board makes a decision.
And there are other organizations, Neighborhood, NAC, and others, we may rely on their own social media. If we send a press release or something to them, they can then use their own media to disseminate that information. So there's going to be a lot of coordination that we don't cover.
We'll let you guys know as we find out how we're headed.
Yeah. I just think, we always hear that people don't hear, so we kind of like to push instead of require people to come and pull.
I totally understand.
All right, so the last piece of tonight that I kind of wanted to go over a little bit with you is the schedule. It's a nice fold-out piece with the yellow on top. We put together a schedule. We wanted to go through a lot of the issues first. We're trying to front-load this a little bit because, as we all know, things come up, and this will definitely change, but this is kind of the major outline of what we want to do, at least through the end of March, beginning of April of this year. We'll continue on after that, of course, and it's going to be jam-packed for the first part of spring. But hopefully by the time the sun comes out, we'll be able to take a little bit of time for other things. There's a couple of spaces in here for things like annual reviews and dockets, which you get every year, of course. And then various other items that are one-time things, hopefully, like I-502 that will be coming to you here pretty soon. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say about the schedule. I have everything listed here and what's planned to be presented on those certain dates for work sessions. None of these are hearings. They're all work sessions. None of the ones for the comp plan, anyway. There are a couple of hearings on here for different things, like open space and timberland applications that... As most of you know, you've heard before, they take all of 5 minutes at a hearing and usually don't have a work session for it. But these are just the various things that we have on our regularly scheduled program and then getting ramped up on the comp plan. So if you have any questions, please let me know or send me an email and I'd be happy to go through them with you.
If I may add just a little bit of information. I guess I probably should have talked before Jeff spoke, but one of the things that Oliver mentioned and alluded to is irregardless of what we do with the comp plan update, whether we boundary, whether we change zoning, whether we entertain some specific request or whatever, one of the projects that we're undertaking is basically a rewrite of the comprehensive plan document itself, the actual physical plan. And if you spent much time looking through the document, it's chock full of interesting facts and figures and lots of stuff, tables and whatnot. But there, when you get to the policy section, there's too much chaff and none of wheat in the document. And so the goal of this of the rewrite, which is going to take place in a tandem exercise with the conference update, is to actually physically rewrite the document. We've got a new table of contents that we've agreed upon as staff. And if you look in the back, you will see a set of tabs that are chapters 1 through 10. That's going to be the new organization, the document. And what we're doing is,
had staff who've been assigned, I've made assignments to various people working on various chapters that relate to this new format. So we're taking, in some ways, we're going to take current policy, sort of shuffle a little bit, put it into these new chapters, and then see what we can get rid of. And the idea at the end of the day to come out of this is to be policy neutral, unless we actually want to change something. But if we can say something in three or four policies, and you know, we don't need 15, we're going to get rid of the flowery language and stuff out of this. So when it, in part of this schedule, you're going to see housing and public facilities, say on March 20th. I don't know exactly what this is going to. How we're going to do this, if we need to make a decision fairly quickly. But each staff member is taking a chapter and created a two-column table, one which, you know, unfortunately is fairly lengthy, with current policies down there, down one side, and what we propose to say about them in a second column. I can use the two that I've worked on are the environmental element and the rural element. A lot of the stuff is written as an action item. It's an implementation strategy. You'll see from our table of contents, we've created an implementation chapter. What do people actually need to do to make this happen? To the extent we can include benchmarks to what kind of progress we're making. We truly want to make this a comprehensive plan document. All the material that deals with the subject matters, we will keep. That's all important. We'll put that in a technical appendix. So if you want information about the transportation system in the county or the housing, you know, housing information, we'll keep all of that. But the idea is that the actual policies themselves, the goal is to have a one-page chapter introduction that says, this is why it's important, this is why the county is dealing with it, here's the statutory requirements behind it, and then maybe a couple pages, depending on the breadth of the topic, of what the actual policy is. So that's the goal. Our thinking is that we've created sort of rough drafts of all of this, and to sort of facilitate the discussion while we have some time about what the county's policies ought to be with regard to these topics, and to get some insight and feedback from you as to what we can get rid of. The idea was that for these next foreseeable several work sessions, we'll show you what we're proposing to do and see what you think. So that's when you see on here comp plan, there's issue papers. You'll see comp plan policies, environmental, rural land sanitation. You'll actually get new chapters, as rough as they are, that purport to say we're going to scratch three quarters of this language. The real policies are in, you know, 1, 2, and 13. Those we're going to keep. That really tells us what we're going to do. So that's just a little bit of background as to the upcoming work sessions. And again, what we'll do is we'll feed you the chapters that we're like to hear, copy them, and what we do is keep the binder and just slide them right in here. The next time you get a couple more chapters, slide them right in here. The idea is to populate this book, which is why you have such a huge notebook right now with not much.
So for the surface mining overlay, do we have something about this big and then like three times that?
but you know, you'll end up with what, 15 surface mining overlay policies. Those will become, you know, that'll be on one page. So nice idea.
Yeah. The only thing that's different is this doesn't say book one.
Yeah, right.
And then you'll understand clearly.
Yeah. Rod knows of Bushy's books. Because I think we've had, book two, book three?
I think we were three binders.
Three binders at least last time. Yeah. So
how are we going to do tabs for you? Is you have five tabs in the front, or four tabs in the front. The first one's for your schedules and agendas, and then you have room for your appendices and your issue papers on those first tabs. And then the 10 tabs in the middle are your 10 chapters, the comp plan chapters. So those are the chapters that you will be receiving as you go through the work session process. And then there's a tab in the back, the maps, because those are always big and fold out, so you can flip those into the back. And then I've split a Google pad in there with your names on it so that you have something to start on the table.
So we have homework. We have to transfer this stuff in the front into the then we're going to be checked to see how well we did with that.
I'm going to do this.
Yeah. But the main thing was, I think we wanted to go go through with you then, because that's still on the schedule, is to look at the schedule, look ahead here and see what you've got coming up. Next month, you've got I-502. We'll have a work session here on February 6th. This room will be packed. You'll have a hearing on February 20th. So the board has said draft some code. If you want to see what's being proposed, it's on the website. We uploaded it on Tuesday, along with some maps.
So we should be able to
That's in work session. So you've got work sessions and hearings. And then after that is in April and March, kind of harvest plan. So I heard something today that that's not probably going to happen. And then we're going to be reviewing the documents. So this is all in addition to the stuff that we're going to give you that relates to the conflict. So
can we get a clue? Commissioners about 502. I mean, if they're going to just run a moratorium, can't they just like let us know so we don't spend a lot of time on it?
The Attorney General today issued an opinion that said local governments can ban.
Yeah.
So if that's where they're going to go, then that's great. We'll stop work on it.
And that's what I'm hoping. We don't have to go through our part to find out that that's the choice that they made.
Yes, what I will do. I will check in with the county administrator. The board currently has a moratorium that will expire February 13th. And the first thing we're asking them to do, and they agreed to do that when we went to a work session with them, is first, given the fact that the moratorium will expire February 13th, and we are coming to you on the 6th. For a work session and then maybe on the 20th.
Yeah.
We don't have time, the board will have to take action first to extend that moratorium, and that request was made at the last work session and they are going to do so. So there is a hearing coming up when?
February 11th
by the board to consider whether to extend that moratorium, and if they do, you know, we may ask them for 6 months, for 4 months to give us some time to come to you and engage the public before we come back to the board. If you look at what we've done, our staff, Cody and Gary, we've engaged the public at open houses, 4 of them, spread all over the county in Richfield, Central, Hawkinson area, in Camas, and then in downtown. Talking with folks, those 4 open houses provided us some insight. Of course, these are interested folks who have made application or license application to the state. So they want to know, they want to, you know, participate with us. So with that, we have, you know, a map that shows if you do all the areas that the state liquor license control board says you have to not locate 1,000 feet away from. We have a map that shows where those will not be applicable if you're going to do retailing. We have another map that shows where, if you're doing production and growing, where that could be applied. And another, because the two distinction of production, we have another map that shows where that could occur. So some progress have been made. We're going to share that with the board. It's not just the board extending moratorium just for the sake of doing so. So the first thing the board will do on the 11th is give us some time to come to you, and you'll hear from the public. Maybe they will let us know before then whether they're going to ban this, so we don't have to come to you. Or we still come to you and say, should you make a recommendation that they ban it? But we will check in and see what happens. If they extend it, I'm not sure why they would extend it in one term and then asking you to come, maybe just to hear from the public. I don't know.
Seems like they've got their mind made up. So to have us sit there and let the public throw rocks at us just as a matter of process.
I don't know if I would agree that I can tell that they've got their minds made up. The extension of the moratorium is almost mandatory because we're not ready. But if it's being done in the spirit of knowing that it's not going to ever see the light of day, it would sure be great for us to be able to just have that piece of information. So just don't knock yourself out on this, because it's not going to go anywhere politically if they already believe it's dead. Just let us know.
We don't know that.
I know we don't know that at this moment.
The other thing I could suggest, Chase, you may want to, you know, let them know, reach out to them, I guess. Maybe it will become an administrator or the chair of the board. I don't know whether you'll be able to share with you, because, you know, it's only one commission, it takes two for them to make a decision. But you can reach out to the chair, see whether there is any consensus in terms of what they need. But I cannot make that call. I'm not that.
But we have a process to go through. From a land use perspective, this is an easy one. This is the amount of what we need to do in terms of writing code. It's an easy one. But all the other issues that are sort of surrounding it,
it's the torches and the pitchfork part.
I'm sure we're used to that. We just want to make sure you don't lose that.
Yeah, getting prepped for the conflict.
I can tell you, Ron, the good news is it'll be a different set of pitchforks.
Growing the constituency.
Right. One other thing that I may want to just FYI to the Planning Commission, we have started the process with the board to consider your recommendation on surface mining. So the board had a work session on Wednesday. They decided to, when we were on hearing last day, took at least three hearings, four. So they're considering, they did not make any decision on when to go to a hearing. They said they needed more information. They want to look at the maps and the policies together, and then maybe have another work session or go to a hearing on the development regulations and enforcement and monitoring. We don't have any language yet on enforcement and monitoring, so that's something that staff going forward we may draft and have a conversation with the board at a work session. But I can tell you that we've started the process to engage the commissioners, share your recommendations. I know it was a tedious hearing. You all, we spoke highly of you on terms of the work you did. It wasn't 5 votes throughout the process, but we got a vote. 3-2, it was 5-0, it was 4-1, but we made a decision that
welcome back.
That is not before the board. They're very happy with what you did. We provided them the rationale why you went the way you did and came up with the best that we can. We are now working on chronologically, really providing the board what we've done for about 3 years now, if you will. We started with this. The map, the DNR or the Southern map came out in 2005, and here we are trying to designate mineral mining overlay and then revise our code on how we go forward. And one thing I did indicate to the board that is true, and that is that we learned a lot throughout this process, both staff and the Planning Commission. And this is not all about just talking, but we did learn a lot. Folks that live around mining experience noise, blasting, you name it. When you talk about applying overlay on additional area to the mine, is this my experience gonna be now magnified? I don't know. But those that came out and testified truly did testify based on the experience. And they're gonna hear the same thing from the board. But in short, I just wanna let you know that we're starting the process with the board. I don't know what the timeline is before the board commences hearings, but those that testify are eager to see the board make a decision one way or the other. We did receive an appeal from David Mann, but that appeal was considered, was contingent, if I may use the word, but that's his own word, contingent on the board approving your map recommendations. So if the board approves your recommendation on the map, seems to me that they would draw the avenue. That's why it's contingent. So that's how I put it. But I share with the board that they can have a hearing separately on the appeal, or they can combine their hearing with the appeal. So I don't know what decision they will make on that, but not to say much. But we've started the process, just want to let you know that we have. And if you're, normally we don't see a planning commission come to testify before the piece. Before the board, I'm not encouraging you to do so, but if you want to watch, you're welcome to watch. I can also update you as to when I make a decision. So we will entertain questions again tonight. Probably I'll kick off with the planning commission on the plan update. There will be issue papers that you're going to receive from time to time. I don't know what the city's position will be as we move forward, but it is our role to engage and coordinate with the city. Some of you know that for some cities, they have new council members, which will also be brought up to speed. And the city planners are going to be checking with their own council and sharing whatever is coming out of the city's board. So this hearing on the 21st is going to be open. The public is allowed to testify, and I'm sure the cities will let the board know what maybe some of them have already consulted with the city council, so they will share that with the board. So stay tuned. Next time we meet, I will update you on what the board did in terms of the what population to plan for and public participation plan. So that's all we have tonight.
I have two housekeeping things. One, I wanted to make sure that you guys are finding stuff on this website, because I'm sending you the link, and so all of your stuff that's in your packet is always going to be right here. Everything that you're getting, so your comp plan stuff, it's going to be loaded onto here with the date, and also your old minutes will be on this page as well for you to be able to find. And if you want to look at something that's even older, you can click on the previous years, and you've got 2012 in 2011 that you can go back on minutes for if you want to refer to the older stuff. And then I just wanted to warn you that since you've approved the these didn't used to have the links to them of what stuff had happened at the meetings. Your current years now, all of these are linked. They have the staff reports, traffic reports, everything that's in your packet is right here on the web for you if you need to refer to it. And then secondarily, I'm going to be Sonia tomorrow afternoon, and I'm going to blow up your calendars. Since you've approved your agenda for the docket, I'm going to fire off all those dates to you. So you'll be getting all those dates that are on that agenda. And I just want to warn you, if your phone starts going ding, 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 ding. Oh. It's me. Hi. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So if we got reoccurring Thursdays, can you send them as a single event and have them reoccur?
I haven't been doing it for the reason that I am putting on there what you are going to be have the work session on and the hearing on, so you can see what it is and you know ahead of time what it is. If you want me to just do a recurring, I can do it that way too. Because it's for, okay, you don't want it that way.
Yeah, don't you run into issues? I think you can move recurring an individual to recurring occasion.
I can.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you each one of them what separately you're going to be hearing from. So I'll do it that way.
If you want to get back at her, just hit the send response.
To do it somewhere,
send them all back.
It's for your convenience, not for mine.
Really? It doesn't make it easier for you.
You know, it's just a way for me to harass you.
I said, whatever.
audio, it's not only the audio of the work sessions are also going to be uploaded. That's what we've been asking. So I just want to make sure you're aware of it.
Yeah. So are we adjourned?
Yeah.
All right, we are adjourned.